Welcome to Voices of Experience radio show and podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Experience podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. No promotional fees have been paid to anyone appearing on Voices of Experience. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to Voices of Experience on KIXI AM 880, KKNW 1150 AM, and of course my podcast, which you can listen to at any time. My name is Paul Casey, your host. We have, as we always do, Eric Krema and Eric Ryder in the studios. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul.
So this is actually the final show that I'm having come from Palm Springs, and I'm going to spend some time and talking about Palm Springs today. That'll be later in the hour, and it's just going to be some of the experiences I've had and my wife have had coming here for 10 years, and then I'm going to call on somebody who I've been working with locally, and he's going to talk about what it's like to live here, and he's been here for a couple of years, and he's been doing a great job, and the board down here, and you guys have been working together, and I'll introduce him just a little later. Let's see, the feature I have for today is Anthony Rosten, and he wrote a book called You're Not Done Yet. Sounds ominous, I know, but he is talking about parenting young adults in an age of uncertainty. And what's interesting is my first question to him, and you'll hear it in a few moments, but was about how many adult children are moving back into the homes of their parents. I thought I'd get maybe 10%, 15% answer. He said over 50%.
Wow.
That is happening now. And I'm going, whoa. I'm glad I'm going to talk to him about this. I had my own thoughts, my own prejudices about this going into the interview, and he allayed some of those. So it was very interesting. I'm glad to be able to have him on the air today. And I think it'll help a lot of people out who may be dealing with this. Meandering musings for today, Slab City. I don't think anybody in the Seattle area has heard of Slab City, but it's located about 80 miles south of Palm Springs. It has a population of 150, 4,000 during the off season, let's say in the Northwest. People come down here in the sun, like right now or January through this point, it's got 4,000. What makes it fascinating is that Slab City was started in World War II, and it was a actual place where the tanks were preparing to go into North Africa. And they had the tents set up for that. And after this was over, these maneuvers, they pulled the tents and left, but they left the slabs there. I'm not going to tell you any more about this, but Neil Peterson's coming up, and he's going to do this. He's very fascinated by this, and if you know Neil at this point, you know when he gets into something, he jumps in, and this Slab City thing is big to him. And I went to the visit 10 years ago, and it's interesting because, briefly, everybody who lives there is living off what they say the grid. There's no law enforcement, there's no electricity, kind of crime. If it happens, it happens. You're on your own. But again, Neil's going to talk about that. It's just really interesting.
It's the Wild West.
Yeah. It is. Exactly. It's right there. So if you want to go live in the Wild West again, you're right, Eric. That's where you want to visit.
All right.
Voices of History today. The top historical events of April 3rd. Well, today, an iconic leader in the civil rights movement gave his final speech of his life today in Memphis, Tennessee. And I won't say any more, but that's what it occurred today. And also, the first mobile phone call was made on this date. Ooh. Surprised me how long ago that was. But that's coming again, up and coming in Voices of History in about 20 minutes or so.
I imagine that was 1G. We're on 5G now. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Half a G.
Right. I have no idea. I didn't get into that much history on it and the G's and the whatever it is, but you'll be surprised, I think, the date, how long ago it was.
All right.
the timeless classic for today, because of the controversial nature of a side lyric, this week's timeless classic received more airtime than it probably would have if this didn't happen to this band. And I remember the song, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we come to it. This helped push it to number 310, this song that's a timeless classic, of all time by Rolling Stone. That doesn't sound like a lot. Oh, it's 310 in what, the year? No, in all time.
Wow.
But this is where this ended up. It was released in the U.S. in 1967. I know no one can really get it from that introduction, so we'll leave it at that. The solopreneur for today, the types of businesses that have the highest chance of succeeding, according to Entrepreneur Magazine. I highlight this, okay, quite a bit, but I do so because I think it's the most critical part of the process of deciding to go into business for yourself and getting into a business that raises your prospects for success. Because I think this is the most important step, that you get a business that will work. And there are businesses that have a much higher rate of success than others. So we'll talk about that a little bit today. And let's see, I think that's about it. Both Eric's, Crema and Ryder, do you have anything before we get on with the program today?
No, but I do want to quickly say, I'm looking at the clock for today. I'm excited. This is going to be a really fast-paced show. So people, stay tuned. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. So coming up right next is going to be our first discussion. I think this is fascinating. If you want to get classier as you get older, say goodbye to these seven behaviors. So we'll be back with that in just a moment. So we are quickly back, and just wanted to dive right into this. If you want to get classier as you get older, say goodbye to these seven behaviors. I think about this, and I know other people do too, and that is that you don't want to be that guy in the lawn shaking your fist at everything that's happening and get off my lawn, kids. And when I was a kid, everything was perfect and everything's going to hell in a handbasket, you know, that sort of deal. And by the way, I really sincerely don't believe things are so bleak now. Let's get into the first one. There are seven of them. And this, again, is courtesy of Global English Editing. I'll talk about them in just a moment. But that's the site that I got this information from. Mm. And I think it's really helpful. For example, number one, overindulging in negativity. And that's just what I'm talking about. Everything is wrong today. My take on things, I've been around a while now, and we've always had issues in the country. And I think that's what we would hear when I was growing up. It would be like, oh, it wasn't like this when I was a kid. Things are really bad now, and so on. And they were. We had our challenges all the way through. I mean, that's what I'm submitting. The only difference is you decipher now what is different and worse now. And there are things, certainly, to be keeping an eye on, but overindulging in negativity. I give myself, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say I will put myself at a 5, but and 10 being yelling all the time, going out of your mind, bat crazy, 1 being nothing bothers me. Well, if that's the case, you're dead. So right. Where are you in the middle of that? And I want the listeners to think about this and start thinking of that as I go through this. But it would be, I would put myself at a 5. I think maybe 2 years ago I was at a 7, but I've lowered it, I think, because I'm staying away from the news.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I don't listen to the news or hear something. I'll read the paper in the morning, get on with my life. My TV's not all day. I know I go to some people's homes and it's constantly going, and it's whether CNN, Fox News, whatever it is, it's always going. I think that's not a good way to live. What do you guys think?
I think you're right. I think that's smart to get all that information in the morning because you can use that rage that you feel to wake up and get ready to tackle the day. But you got to let it go at a certain point. Otherwise, you spend the day being a grouchy old man.
I see the cereal box now. have a bowl of rage.
That's right.
No, that's
extra crunchy.
I like what you said there, Paul, because in the end, really, what does your knowledge of what pundits are saying on the various news networks really, what is that going to change? All it really does is make you mad.
Right. Yeah. Whether you're mad or what, is it going to change the outcome? No, probably not. Number two, ignoring the power of listening. Now, we're in the radio business.
What was that?
I do a lot of interviews. Thank you, Eric. Yes, for clarifying that. Wake up. No, the power of listening. I'm in, as I say, I do interviews and things like that. So you have to listen to what the person's talking about. So I think maybe my skills are a little bit better, but not that much. I find myself I'm thinking about my response and I'm not listening to the person anymore. And I have to work on that. I don't know where I'm at on my own scale on that, but I'm probably dipping over to the side of 10 than I am 1. I need to keep working on that. And I think it's so important. You know, it says as you get older, but this is good for anybody. What do you guys think?
Yeah, listening is one of those things that, have you ever been in a conversation, say at a dinner party with someone, and you can tell they're not really listening, they're just waiting for their moment to jump in and give their opinion?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, but then it is refreshing when you sit down and you're talking to somebody and like, what do you do for a living? And you talk and talk and talk, and they're like, and they're asking you questions within it, you know? They're listening.
Yes.
They're actually listening. It's nice.
Eric Ryder, do you have anything to add?
No, I just agree with that. And, when you think about, as you're getting older, maybe you're involved in less of the beginnings of relationships. But, when you're dating or, even to have a healthy relationship, you got to learn to listen. And that could be romantic, but that could also be work. That could be, seeing your neighbors at the store. You know, listening is essential.
Absolutely. Number three, letting your jealousy guide your actions. Okay. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. Don't need to go in much detail there. But think about that. Yes, jealousy, guide. Oh, I wish I had what that person had. You keep doing that and not being self-focused. Number four, negative self-care. I think that's obvious, too. That means when you get out of bed, you take a shower. you get on with the day and you shave and do whatever. But you must be in that's a very good routine to keep. And sometimes you see people, no matter, again, I don't think it's just older. I think, again, you'll see people who don't do that. And I think that's a really important point.
Yep.
Let's see. Number five, forgetting the art of a handwritten note.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's something Niels mentioned on Meandering Musings.
That's right. He had a whole segment on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Handwritten note can be surprisingly moving. So maybe time to bring that back. Do more of that.
Marty, my wife, got a belt or something she ordered online. She's ordering all the time, so I don't usually pay much attention, but she opened up something yesterday and got something from some entrepreneur. Talk about that later. This could melt into this segment, but a handwritten note. Thank you so much.
Nice.
For buying this from you. A handwritten note. She'll never forget that. As opposed to just it comes there and it's done. And it was wrapped too, very nicely. She'll never forget that, and I'll bet this person will get more money from her. Number six, overlooking the value of small acts of kindness. Again, that's this is a segment about you should look at as you get older. But again, I think that's
if you want to get classier,
to keep in mind.
Yeah,
exactly. Get classier, acts of kindness, very important. I'm going to say now more than ever, but I think people would appreciate it. I see when I look into the Seattle Times with a rant and rave, you see a couple times a year that someone just allows you to get in front of them in a traffic lane. They're trying to merge in and you just stop and let them in and you wave. That makes their day. And instead of, the opposite.
Well, and it's funny how courtesy and kindness are blurred. I mean, really, it is pretty much the same thing. It used to be just courtesy to hold a door for someone, yeah. male or female. You know, it's just you're walking through the door first, or, hey, I'm going to grab a cup of coffee. Do you want one too? You know, these are now just kindnesses.
Good point. And number seven, failing to practice gratitude. We're all guilty of that. You get up in the morning sometimes, you get off to a negative start or whatever, but just get up for a moment and just say, hey, you know, you're still functioning. If you're healthy, even if you're not, you're trying to get healthy, but be thankful more. And I can certainly work on that more. But anyhow, I just thought these were very interesting, and it came from Global English Editing. I'm going to talk about other things that they have sent out similar to this. And they're an editing company, a global English editing company. That's what they do. They do online professional editing. I'm not promoting them per se. I know nothing about them. But the reason I mention them, what a marketing tool for them to just get word out there, because it's got me reading them. But then again, they're an online professional editing company. I didn't know what global English editing, what's that? So I looked it up.
That's great. And I love the list. And, you know, the list is only as good as the action afterward. I am going to do one of these this week. I'm going to make a point of writing a handwritten note to someone.
There you go.
Between now and our next show.
Eric,
what's that?
All right. You're going to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see. What am I going to do? I'll let you do that one because that takes work.
Yeah. I'll send it to you, Paul.
All right. Oh.
You won't be able to read my handwriting, but I'm sending it.
Yeah, that's my problem too.
I will try to practice more gratitude between now and next week.
Nice.
Eric Ryder, you're not off the hook. Do you have one of these?
I think I'm going to overindulge in negativity.
All right. Excellent. With that, we'll leave this segment.
Stay classy, right. Seattle.
Right.
Stay classy.
All right. We'll be back with our next guest in just a second. All right, we have Dr. Anthony Rosten, who is going to join us. He is a nationally recognized expert in child and adolescent psychiatry at Cooper University Healthcare Center in New Jersey. He co-authored a book with Dr. Janet Hibbs, You're Not Done Yet, Parenting Young Adults in an Age of Uncertainty. Take it away.
Starting with a baseline, what percentage of, let's say, adult children move back in with their parents? And what I mean by that is that, like, I moved back with my parents at some time in my late 20s, but I was closing on a house. I lived there for a few weeks, and then when the home closed, I moved out. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a different set of circumstances where the adult children come and move back in. First of all, what percentage of families does this happen to? 10%, 20%?
No, it's actually over half of young adults are moving back in for some period of time with their parents beyond a couple of weeks. This was accelerated by the pandemic, but we now see it as the new normal, interestingly. We don't think of it as unusual. It was maybe 30% in the 80s and 90s. It's really grown in the last two decades. So now we would say it's over half.
Let's say we go back 50, 70 years or so. What was it then?
Back in the early 20th century, again, most people lived at home through their young adult period. And sometimes they even married and stayed in the same household, right? So I would say the changes that occurred around in World War II and right beyond, where it was normal to leave home and to just be on your own, that really was only about for a brief period of time and from the 50s right through the end of the 20th century. But the trend started to change. I think they've accelerated because of changes in the housing situation, economic, definitely a change in the culture. We think that it's really important for parents to understand that it's not your fault. You haven't done anything wrong. That's the whole world is different.
And, you know, it's interesting that maybe then post-World War II, that was an aberration.
And then related to that, and this is really another part of the question you're asking, is that if you think about adulting as, you know, being able to finish your education and move out on your own, have a job, partner with someone, and eventually have kids, that time that timeline, which was been done by the end of your 20s, is now moving into your 30s. In 2020, only about a quarter of young adults by age 34 had finished all of this and started to have all of the signs of being an adult. Childbearing has been postponed. Moving out on your own has been postponed. Even having a permanent career has been postponed. So naturally, it seems a little bit difficult for parents to adjust to this because they grew up at a period of time when the timeline was different. Start with understanding that it's a new era, and it's important for everyone to accept that rather than thinking of it as somehow a failure of someone's part.
Yeah. One thought occurred to me too is you generally have two parents, and then sometimes they may have disagreements as to whether to allow an adult child to move back in. There must be some dynamics there involved.
Oh, of course. I mean, and these are some of the cases we describe in the book. Now, even whether parents are living together or separately, parents are often at odds around this whole notion of, are we indulging the young person? Shouldn't they be out already and doing things on their own? And we really think that it's important to have a realistic approach. On the one hand, you do want to offer some safe haven, a place for a person to figure things out. On the other hand, they need to have responsibility. They need to be able to help out in the home, contribute economically if possible, and barring any mental disorder or addiction, to be able to make progress in the direction that we were describing. I don't think tough love gets people to get through these stages any faster, because by the time someone's in their 20s, they're looking at their parents as either they're okay or, hey, they're really making my life more difficult. And you don't want to be on that side of the discussion. By the way, I think a lot of what fuels this judgmentalness on parents' part is a sense that they did something wrong or that something's wrong with their young person, rather than, oh, this is a new reality. How do we get to talk about it? I do think the pandemic accelerated what we were describing, but it also made people more accepting. Oh yeah, they got to move back because, you know, their job shut down and they lost their job, or they were in college and they had to come home, and learning to have fun being together instead of it just being a chore.
Where is that line where it's talking about being helpful to the young adult to move back into the home, and when does it become harmful?
There is no sort of clear line. I think you're helpful as long as what you're doing seems to you and to the young adult to be what makes the most sense. It's no longer helpful when you kind of see a situation where the young person isn't doing anything to take responsibility and move towards, say, greater self-actualization. Not such a great idea if your young person has an internet addiction and they're spending all the time playing video games or, you know, you looking at YouTube's.
Leads me to my next question, and that would be, when is it time that maybe your young adult child needs professional help?
Either they're spending too much time withdrawn and escaping into either the internet, and they're, you know, not coming out and they're socially isolated, or if you sense that they're overusing drugs or alcohol, those are obvious. And then more subtle things like being bored and not being able to concentrate, being unmotivated, not being able to get even any enjoyment from things that normally they would enjoy. My young person may be suffering from a depressive episode, and we spent a fair amount of time describing all of this in the book.
Is there anything else before we go?
Well, I just want to encourage everybody to look at the time that your young person is having, you know, with you, either at living with you or even if you're supporting them, as time to share and get to know one another in a different way, because they're an adult, you're an adult, and, you know, you can be the parent of adult and really learn to enjoy it if you allow yourself.
So there you have it. That's a great interview I felt with Anthony Rostin, and he really did a good job, I think, of outlining many of the issues that are going on right now in regards to raising young adults and the challenges that generation before didn't really face, but it's real and it's happening now. Again, the name of the book is You're Not Done Yet, Parenting Young Adults in an Age of Uncertainty. That's all you need to do is Google You're Not Done Yet. There's a couple videos ahead of it on the top of the fold. Google down and you'll go to You're Not Done Yet, and it's by Macmillan Publishers. So there we have it.
When a flock of geese knocked out two engines on U.S. Airways Flight 1549 right after takeoff from LaGuardia Airport, who would you want in the cockpit? Captain Sully or a pilot on their maiden flight? If Captain Sully was your choice, then experience is important to you. And that's what Voices of Experience with Paul Casey is all about. People with experience in their chosen fields. A variety of topics are explored, including local and national public affairs, self-employment, travel, lifestyles, health and fitness, history, and adventure.
Welcome to this edition to Voices of Experience. My name is Paul Casey.
Now, Voices of Experience is simulcast on AM 880 KIXI and 1150 AM KKNW on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Voices of Experience is also rebroadcast on Kixie Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Visit voicesofexperience.com and take a five-minute self-employment quiz. The higher you score on the quiz, the higher your prospects for success. That's voicesofexperience.com.
Welcome to today's Voices of History.
80% of New Orleans, including much of downtown, is underwater. The Big Easy's famous Canal Street, living up to its name.
Apparently, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center in New York.
I just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did? I did. That was out of my view.
Yes, and that's the second explosion.
There you have it. This is Voices of History for today. And again, I just got to call out Benny Mathers. What a great introduction he put together. It really captures what I felt in my mind an introduction to this should be. All right, so let's see. In 1968, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I've Been to the Mountaintop speech in the Mason Temple in Memphis, Tennessee. The speech would be his last, as he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, the next day on April 4th, 1968. I just wanted to play the last clip of that speech because it sends chills up my spine every time I hear it, because I think what I hear from it, he knew something was coming, whether it was the next day or not. He knew he wasn't going to have a long life.
A long life, longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
All right, so there you have it. That was the night before he was assassinated at 39 years old.
Wow. Wonderful words, but just amazing that it happened the very next day. As he said, it's as if he knew.
In 1973, chills up my spine again.
Yes.
In 1973, the first mobile phone call was made by Martin Cooper, a Motorola employee in New York City. He called his rival at Bell Labs to inform him that he was speaking via a mobile phone. 1973.
Nice. Wow. Mobile phones are as old as me.
Did you have any idea, or did I missed that? I had no idea. I thought they came out, probably the first one was 1990 or something. But
I remember some old shows from the 60s showing people on phones in their car.
Right.
But I thought those were called radio phones. But
yeah, I think you're right.
Isn't that interesting? He called his rival. That was brilliant.
Yeah, the other thing is that, you know, I remember from the 50s, Dick Tracy calling Dick Tracy, you know, when he had a watch phone. right.
Yeah. Predicted the future.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that this happened this week in history because, of course, well, not of course, you may not know this, but the Pony Express debuted April 3rd, 1860. So we came a long way between then and 1973 with the first mobile phone call.
Wow.
And the Pony Express, the first trip was from St. Joseph, Missouri. And by the way, there's a great Pony Express museum in St. Joseph, Missouri that's worth visiting if you get a chance. And the first trip went from St. Joseph to Sacramento, California, and took 10 days.
Wow. You know, something about that, Eric, that you mentioned that brings to mind that why I like doing this Voices of History thing is I learned things along the way that I didn't know. But one of the things about the Pony Express, it only lasted a few years.
That's right.
Because the telegraph came in and just kind of wiped it out. But yep. I didn't know, you know, dates or anything. But while I was reviewing something maybe about the Pony Express, I went, oh, my gosh, it didn't really last that long.
It ended service in October 1861. So,
yeah, okay.
About a year and a half, I guess.
That's it. All right. So there you go. Let me see. What else do we have? Ah, I got some history from historylink.org, that wonderful site, the local site. Baseball is on. We're carrying the games of the Tacoma Rainiers. So happy about that. And looking at baseball, just looking back again, professional baseball began in Washington State in 1872. Did not know that. Seattle had an amateur team called the Dolly Varten, D-E-N, Varten. And you know what that means? Eric, you're a fisherman.
Yeah, it's a inland salmon, isn't it?
It's a trout.
It's a trout, okay.
But I had no idea what a Dolly Varten was. But yeah, and men for the team, go fish.
Go fish.
That was their rallying time, go fish.
Yeah. I've never caught one, but there are certain lakes here that
okay.
are in there. And I think it's catch and release only in this state because they're pretty rare.
Oh, I've never heard of it. So I didn't. I had to look it up. It's a fish and it's a trout. So anyhow, Emil Sick. Does anybody remember that name? It was a guy who made a small fortune brewing beer after the end of Prohibition in Seattle. Sick bought the team, Seattle Rainiers, in 1937. Excuse me, he bought the Seattle Indians in 1937, renamed the team the Seattle Rainiers, and built a brand new stadium in Rainier Valley called Sick Stadium. And that was torn down, I believe, in 1978.
Is that,
and I was at the ballpark.
Is that the
times.
One that was down there on for Rainier Avenue?
Yes.
Yeah, right by, I think there's a Lowe's there now, right?
Yes, a hardware. That is there. And as a matter of fact, you enter the store, they have home plate where it was located.
Oh, that's cool.
Stand there. But it was a rickety old stadium. But speaking of that, I'm going to go into a little detail on this. Let's see. I don't know about how much time. We're doing fairly good on this time. But anyhow, just really quickly, that's where the Rainiers played. And then till 1969, then the one-year team, the Seattle Pilots, came there. They lasted 1 year. And one of the reasons was that didn't make it is because the stadium was just very inadequate. And I went to opening game there of the Seattle Pilots, and the workers were working on the roof as we entered the ballpark. When the first pitch came, the work stopped. The workers were looking over the eaves, watched the game. We were leaving the game. They started in again. And all they had was porta potties out there in center field. It was just not ready. But I'll talk about some more about that in the future. It's a fascinating future as to how the Pilots left after 1 year and how the Mariners were born after that. So
they flew the coop.
Anyhow, that's it. They flew the coop, and literally and figuratively. So let's see. We'll be back with Meandering in just a moment.
You have been listening to Voices of History. If you have historical events that you would like to share, call the Voices of Experience hotline at 425-653-1166. That's 425-653-1166.
Getting off the grid. If you want to get off the grid, a popular spot to do so is Slab City. Slab City sits on some 640 acres owned by the state of California, located in the Sonoran Desert, 12 miles east of the Salton Sea, the largest lake in California, some 35 miles long and 15 miles wide. To call it a city is stretching the normal use of the word. It's unincorporated, no mayor, no city manager, no public works department, no sanitation department, and no police or fire department. To my knowledge, no taxes are imposed or collected, and no one pays rent to stay on the land. Now, it takes a while to get there. It's 180 miles from Los Angeles, 150 miles from San Diego, and 260 miles from Phoenix. How Slab City came about is an interesting story. The concrete slabs were built in 1942 for the Marine Corps' World War II Camp Dunlop. The camp was used during the war, but by 1956, all the buildings and structures had been removed. Only the concrete slabs remained. I don't know exactly why I'm so fascinated by Slab City, but I surely am. Whenever I have out-of-town visitors, I always suggest that we take a full day and go see Slab City. It's only an hour and 30-minute drive from the area that I live in part of the year. However, by the time I include in the day's itinerary other spots such as Bombay Beach, the Salton Sea, East Jesus, and the Salvation Mountain, the trip takes a full day. What is it about Slab City that so sparks my interest? And it's not just a passing interest. I have visited Slab City at least twice or three times a year for the last 15 years, and I've not grown tired of it. If someone walked up to me right now and said, "Do you want to go to Slab City?" my answer would be, "Hell yes, your car or mine." I'm intrigued by the fact that most people would never want to go to visit Slab City. I'm in awe of the ability of the, quote, residents, if you will, of Slab City to exist. Given the lack of electricity, the lack of water, lack of sewer and other amenities. Also to survive given the temperatures that average over 100 degrees for 4 months in the summer. And also given that the annual rainfall hovers around 2.8 inches a year. The census in 2020 estimated that upwards of 4,000 people live in Slab City in the winter. And then in the summer, that number drops dramatically to less than 200. There are a few other drawbacks to Slab City. There is trash and debris and waste littered around many ramshackled structures. There is at times a smell from that and the nearby Salton Sea. Drugs are clearly in use. Bottom line, it's a little sketchy and not a place where you would send your kids out the front door to go play. On top of all this, just 15 miles to the east is the military's Chocolate Mountain Gunnery Range, which at any time, day or night, is an active practice range with bombs exploding and guns firing. The residents of Slab City include a hodgepodge of campers, drifters, homeless, snowbirds, migrants, squatters, artists, survivalists, and people just wanting to get away from everything and everyone. Nevertheless, I'm fascinated by the ever-changing community of Slab City. It never stays the same. I look forward to knowing that the people I will meet in Slab City will be a different experience for me every time I go there. When I'm in Slab City, I find myself almost in a meditative state. For some reason, everything slows down. It becomes a time of reflection. At least for me. For all these reasons, I can't get enough of Slab City. To be clear, no, I have no interest in living there, none whatsoever. However, I have a real interest in learning everything I can about Slab City and its residents. And I'm not alone in my interest in Slab City. It's appeared in 21 movies, including This Place in 2019, Snowbird in 2016, Desert Coffee in 2017, Below Sea Level in 2008, Cactus Blossom in 2019, and a movie called Slab City in 1998 and also in 2019. However, my favorite is Sean Penn's Into the Wild, released in 2007. Penn wrote, co-produced, and directed the film, which was based on a book by Jon Krakauer, who's one of my favorite authors. And the cast was amazing. It included Emile Hirsch, William Hurt, Vince Vaughn, and Hal Holbrook. And Hal Holbert was the one whom Chris, the drifter, engaged with during his two-month stay in Slab City. There's so much to talk about in Slab City, but I'll save talking about Salvation Mountain and the Outdoor Art Museum in East Jesus, a suburb of Slab City, for a future podcast. But let me tell you a little bit about Slab City's library. Yes, indeed, Slab City has a library, but it's a little unusual. You can get a beer in the library. The library is covered by planks and tarps, but it's not fully enclosed. So it's subject to high winds, dust, and sandstorms. If you see a book that you'd like to read, you can take it with you. No need to check it out. They just ask you to return it if at all possible. Bottom line, if you want to get off the grid, this is the place to go. It's been called Squatter's Paradise. Others have referred to it as, quote, one of America's last free places, unquote. Still others have called it, quote, the end of the road. Others have called it an enclave of anarchy. An article in the October 2018 Smithsonian Magazine said of the Slab City population, quote, there are clearly people there who don't want to be found. So there's something about disappearing, and the desert offers that kind of opportunity, unquote.
Be sure to subscribe to Meandering Musings wherever you get your favorite podcasts. For more about Neil Peterson and to read more Meandering Musings and travel essays, visit meanderingmusings.net. Like the podcast? Please help us grow our listenership. Tell your friends about Meandering Musings and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
All right, so there you go. We just finished that with Neil. Fascinating. I like to talk about it more, and we will in upcoming shows, but we are pressing on. I'd like to just talk a little bit about Palm Springs because this is my last week here before I come back to the Great Northwest. Looking forward to it. This is our 10th anniversary here. Just want to give an overview for people who have not been here and are considering it because we were in the boat 10 years ago. I'd never been here. I go, why do we want to be here? I knew it was a popular place, never thought about it, but we did because we got our home remodel. We've been coming ever since. And why? Well, give a few reasons. January through mid-April, about this time, I'd say is a sweet spot in terms of weather. Now, the fall, I've heard, is very nice, too, when people are down here, but we've never been there at that point. And most days are in the 80s, which is perfect. No humidity. It does get cool at night, in the upper 30s sometimes, so low 40s. It's supposed to be, I think, a couple days from now, like in the low 40s for the evening. Palm Springs itself has about 500,000 people. No, excuse me. That's in the whole valley. Okay. Palm Springs has about 23,000. And when I say the valley, that's between Palm Springs, the very west end of the valley, all the way to La Quinta and Indio in that area. That's all on the other side. And there are various cities in between, like Rancho Mirage, Palm Desert, and things like that. El Paseo, fashion district, and plenty of boutique shops, high-end restaurants, and very interesting place to visit. There's the McCallum Theater here, one of the most beautiful theaters I've ever been to. And Mike Kolar, who's going to come in just a moment, is going to the McCallum Theater for the first time tomorrow, or tonight, excuse me. And I'm going tomorrow. That's right. I'm going to see Kathy Griffin there tomorrow night, my wife and I. Joshua Tree National Park, you can't miss it. You must come down and see that. Epic trees. It's over 1,200 square miles. It's magnificent. I wish I had more time to talk about it. Now, if you're into golf, and a lot of people are, there are over 150 courses, but it's expensive right now to play. Average, I'd say $90 a round. It can be as high as $300, as low maybe as maybe $60. But that's gone up considerably. When COVID was here, it went way down. But now people are coming back in droves, and golf is much more popular again. So it's not the deal it is, but there are beautiful courses. For the second season, the Coachella Valley Thunderbirds are playing hockey in Acrisure Arena. It's just built. It's just off the Highway 10. And the Coachella Valley Thunderbirds are the farm team to our Seattle Kraken. And the same people who built Climate Pledge built this arena too. Beautiful arena. Love this. Been to a couple hockey games with Neil Pederson. Let's see. The crime has gone up here on the negative side some. We've noticed that. Homelessness has developed here, but certainly not that we see in the Seattle area or other cities up north. Traffic is getting difficult. We've seen that. So just a warning, the traffic is much more than we've seen before. Now I'd like to bring Mike in because Mike has lived here for 2 years. He's from Chicago, and he's the voice of experience living here. So, Mike, thank you so much for what you've done in the show so far. This has gone without a flaw. I just burst in here maybe 6-7 weeks ago, and it's been going great. Thank you, Mike.
No, it's been a blast hosting you here for the season.
So I want to ask you, what is your impressions? What can you add to what I said or correct me?
It's a pretty damn utopian place. I feel so many cities, big and small, in America have been homogenized where they've kind of lost their distinct flavor, yet Palm Springs is really a unique place in terms of architecture, culture, the interesting citizens or colorful locals that live here, the beauty of the land, and just some damn magical aspect that really allows people, including my very high-strung relatives, to come out here and just take a deep breath and relax. It has a, I don't know if it's something in the mountains, but it does have that effect on people. It really just kind of let people move at a gentler pace, which I think is the perfect antidote to the United States the last couple of years.
So do you anticipate yourself and be living here and your wife for the foreseeable future? You're here.
We're here. We love it. And we're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay. One quick question before we leave. Now, the summer here are really difficult. How do you get through those?
Well, as a lifelong Chicagoan until 2 years ago, winter is 5 months of atrocity. Here, it's 10 weeks of sheer hell. But at least when the sun sets, you can grill, be out in your yard at night. Doesn't really start till July 1. The first 4 weeks, I catch up on house projects and stuff. And then, August through early September is kind of terrible, but unlike the Midwest, where you could drive 8 hours from Chicago, it's still freezing cold. We can drive up to Idlewild in the mountains. We could drop into La Jolla and be by the water. So there's a lot of escapes, from it. And also just as nice not to see gray and gloomy and depressing out the window. So it there's some compensation for that difficult 10-week summer.
Yeah, like Idlewild, that's a place you can go to escape it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so much.
30-minute drive up there, and it's an entire different world.
Very true. Well, thanks for that. Really appreciate that, because that kind of brings it in, because I know brings it home in the sense that even since we've been coming, we've noticed when we come back, we talk to people. I mean, even when we started coming, there were like 2 restaurants open in Palm Springs. Now they're staying open year-round. I mean,
yes.
It's becoming a 12-month
or maybe
city
a little closer, like 3 weeks to give a little extended break. But yeah, it has become a year-round place now.
Very good. Thank you again, Mike. Appreciate those comments. And just a couple of words before we go. And I wanted to talk about a little bit about self-employment when you're going into that. And solopreneur is what I call this segment. And just a few things to consider. I know if you listen to the show every week, you're going, why don't you quit talking about this? And I'm just submitting that the most important thing that you do is prepare, and the most important thing to prepare is to really decide your most important decision, what type of business that you want to go into that will find a niche and solve a problem, okay? I've said that very many times. I'll just say it a couple more times, but here's some ideas of service-based businesses. They include consulting. Whatever you've done in your life, you can probably consult privately. Your own career. Turn that into a consulting business. Freelancing, you can freelance on that. You can tutor. Event plan, that's another service-based business that people have made a business out of. And just service-oriented industries in general. Online business, e-commerce, what does that mean? That's like a big online business would be Amazon. So just become a really tiny Amazon, an array of products and services that you can mail order yourself and do things like that. So there are just a couple ideas for thinking about going into business for yourself. And again, we'll be talking about this much more as the show continues this year. A couple things to think about, too, is health and fitness. I mean, there's obviously so much new focus, not so much new, but it's getting more intense all the time. You can't escape it, and for good reason. Health and wellness being business related to fitness. You know, you could teach classes, nutrition, mental health, holistic wellness, all sorts of things, niche food businesses, things like that. So we're, again, going to be discussing that. And if you want to talk about that further, call the Voices of Experience hotline. If you have any suggestions on this, 425-653-1166. That's 425-653-1166. So I think that's about it for today. Thank you both, Eric Ryder and Eric Crema, very much for doing this. And remember that Voices of Experience airs on Kixies at 3 p.m. You probably know that. And on Hubbard Sister Station, KKNW, 1150 a.m. And it is repeated on Kixie on Sundays. Quote of the week. This nation is like all others that have been sprued upon this earth, ready to shout for any cause that will tickle or fill your pocket. What a hell of a heaven it will be. No, what a hell of a heaven it will be when you get all the hypocrites assembled there. Mark Twain. This week's Timeless Classic coming up next. Thanks for listening. And again, you will hear this on Kixie, part of it in KKNW, but not on the podcast due to licensing reasons. Have a great rest of the week.